I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. It's good to have you with us. There was breaking news on Friday morning of dozens killed and many more injured after an explosion at a Shia mosque in Kandahar. And this comes just 1 week after a deadly suicide bombing at a different Shia mosque in Kunduz. It's a reminder of the agonizing conditions facing the people of Afghanistan since the U.S. ended our 20-year presence in the country. More than 200,000 refugees have fled Afghanistan in recent months, and approximately 55,000 have relocated to the U.S. since mid-August. According to the Department of Homeland Security, about 40% are eligible for special immigrant visas because of the work they did aiding U.S. efforts in Afghanistan. But for other evacuees, it's unclear what their legal status will be. Many entered the country not as traditional refugees, but instead under a temporary legal process. That means many of these refugees currently do not have a direct pathway to permanent residency. For more on this, I spoke with Naeed Samadi Bahram, Women for Afghan Women's U.S. Country Director. And we started by talking about how she's doing.
It has been one of the darkest time of my life. I am 40 years old, and I have lived my entire life through the 4 decades of war in the country. But I have never felt this hopeless and helpless in my life. And it's not actually the story of me, but every single Afghan anywhere in the world right now.
What makes this moment feel so much more hopeless?
I think everything around it. I think no Afghan anywhere in the world thought that after 20 years of hard work, spending trillions of dollars, thousands of lives lost, we will go back to where we were 20 years ago. And this is, I think, really heartbreaking for all of us.
I want to talk a little bit about your own experience of resettling in the U.S. in 2006. What was that process like for you? With whom did you work? How were you received?
So when I came to United States, I did not come as a refugee. I got married and I came here. My husband was an Afghan American. So my experience was very different here in the U.S., where I was a refugee in Pakistan. My mother died because of a bomb explosion in Kabul when I was 10 years old in 1990s. And we had to flee the country and go to Pakistan and were refugees for 15 years there. Then when I came to United States, my experience was very different than what other people are experiencing right now. I was not a refugee, but I have also had left my family, my friends, my country, and came to a new place. I felt very isolated. I felt very alone. And the reason why I am here today is because I wanted to look into an organization that worked with the Afghan community. And I found out Women for Afghan Women, the only one in the East Coast. So I went and I offered volunteering. And it has only been 6 months that I was in the state. And I was very homesick, very homesick. And that's where I found a home away from home with this community here in the U.S.
And tell me about the work that Women for Afghan Women does in the U.S. and particularly in New York.
We have educational programs that provides English as a second language classes for women. And we have preparation for citizenship test classes, as well as preparation for getting your driving permit test. Every year, we have between 180 to 200 students through our educational programs. Majority of them are Afghan, but we also have non-Afghan students. We have a youth leadership program under our education umbrella that have girls and boys leadership program. Our focus is on youth leadership and welcoming these kids, majority of them are immigrants or a few first generation, welcoming them to United States, but also teaching them some of the cultures and customs that are very different from Afghanistan through this the leadership program, but also working with them on their leadership skills. And we have another program that's Youth Rising Program, that those are a youth ages 16 to 20 year old, and we work on college and career readiness. Majority of these girls who go to college are the very first to go to college in United States or in their in anywhere. So we work to make sure that they understand the system, they understand how to apply for colleges, and making sure that they do not drop out of school just because there is no one to guide them to get into the next step. This was all our educational program. And then we have legal services. We have immigration attorneys who serve the community with any immigration legal needs. We also have case management, that we provide casework to family members who need anything from, for example, SNAP, housing, Medicaid, Medicare, from that to also any other need that a woman or a family has. We obviously, majority of our work also is with the victims and survivors of domestic violence. We do a lot of education around sexual assault, dating violence, and domestic violence. But we also work with individuals who are survivors of violence.
And obviously, you've been doing this kind of work, the organization's been doing this kind of work for many years. But again, if we go back to what we were speaking of in the beginning, sort of how this moment feels different, how has the work changed over the past few months since the U.S. left Afghanistan?
I'm sure you know that we are the largest women's rights organization inside Afghanistan, and we have over 1,200 staff who are still in Afghanistan. So when things change in Afghanistan, our entire focus was how can we get our high-risk staff to safety? But beside that work of getting people out for safety, which unfortunately we were unsuccessful to get anyone out through the emergency evacuation, but our work here also tripled because the community has gone through a lot. Any of us here has family back home, including myself. We still have family, we still have friends, we still have relatives that we are panicking about their safety. And people, our work tripled. Everybody would have called asking, how can I get my family out? How can I help people there? So we have hired a full-time immigration attorney to be just working with the community on those cases, especially those who need on humanitarian they need to apply for humanitarian parole, or those who want to do family reunification and do family petitions. We also have seen a lot of issues with mental health because this situation brought back a lot of trauma to many Afghans. So we are hiring now, we're in process of hiring a full-time mental health counselor who will be available not only for people who are here, but also for the refugees that we will be welcoming in the next few weeks. We are working with partner organization to make sure that we get enough pro bono attorneys and mental health counselor who understand the language and can be of service for the community.
I so appreciate your point about the need for mental health, the need for social support, even the language you used of finding a home away from home after having left so much. I'm also wondering what other kinds of direct services and supplies are necessary, particularly for people who are coming as refugees, things that maybe folks haven't necessarily thought about in terms of the kinds of needs that these women and their families have.
I want to mention to all our listeners that Afghans who have left during this emergency evacuation did not bring a thing with them. They might only have a small 7 to 8 pound backpack with them. And they didn't even have access to their bank account when they left. The banks were frozen when they were leaving Afghanistan. And people has nothing. So they are starting from zero right now. and they need anything and everything. So our organization, with a group of volunteers, raised money to purchase new clothing for these people, because we heard of stories that people haven't changed clothes for over a month, and they go take shower when they were in Qatar, and they would sit in the sun to make their clothes dry. So we packed for 750 individuals, clothing, undergarments, shoes, socks, a full set for adults and youths and children, and they are all ready to go when the families arrive at JFK. We work with the Port Authority at JFK to welcome the families who will be arriving in New York. We also have set their holding space where the refugees will be welcomed first, their first experience of landing on the American land. We made it culturally competent and made sure that it's a warm place so that people can feel welcomed. We also have worked with Port Authority. They needed interpreters and translators, so we got them over 200 translators and interpreters who are available and on a standby, that when the planes arrive here, and we will be willing to meet them and make sure that to do the process for them as easy as possible. Within that group of 200 individuals, we have attorneys, doctors, nurses, psychologists, therapists, as well as public school teachers. So that way, if there is a need for any of these professionals, we will be able to provide that. We also will be providing warm meals and hot tea and coffee through an Afghan business who partner with us, who will be bringing the coffee truck and lunch trucks by the airport, where when the families arrive, we'll be receiving warm halal meal as well as hot tea and coffee. The organization received funding from Airbnb and Uber, so we will be able to provide temporary housing for families. A family can stay for almost a month at a place until we find them a permanent home. We also will be able to provide them transportation for their appointments, as many of them, obviously, when they come now, they do not have that. We are also will be able to work with them and job placement. And the organization, because we are the only one in East Coast providing all these direct services, have been working now in partnership with refugee resettlement organizations to make sure that we are, that the gap that they have between their services and the refugees' needs will be felt by Women for Afghan Women.
As you talk about these incredible and absolutely crucial wraparound services, you know, I live in North Carolina, and I have, been involved with sort of charitable organizations that are trying to assist with Afghan resettlement in recent months. And I have noticed a level of outpouring of community support that's very different than when we were working with these same organizations with Syrian refugees. And finding in that context, so often we were battling against a community sentiment that wanted to expel Syrian refugees. It did not want Syrians in our community, but much more open to the question of and the experiences of Afghan refugees. I'm wondering if you have seen something similar, or if your experience has been different on that point.
I think I have seen exactly what you have been experiencing and seeing it. I think the situation in Afghanistan for many Americans, including myself, I think we feel responsible in some way of what mess has been created in Afghanistan, unfortunately. And I think that is one of the reasons why people, the ones who feel responsible, the ones who feel that this should have never happened there, we have had so much achievement, we should do something now to fix this. And I have talked to thousands of Americans in the past couple of months, and every single person have been saying this, I'm sorry for what's happening. And I know it's not an individual's mistake. It's not one or the other's mistake, but I think a lot of Americans feel that way about Afghanistan right now. And especially, I'm sure you've seen the outpouring support of the veterans getting their interpreters and translators out of Afghanistan because they feel responsible. And they have been doing anything to make sure to get them out because they feel that they work for us and we put their life at risk now. So it's our responsibility to go to get those people out of Afghanistan. And that's why they have been so unified, so strategically working and fundraising and getting people out of Afghanistan.
Naeed Samadi Bahram, Women for Afghan Women's U.S. Country Director. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me again.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With three updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.